Hi folks, greetings and welcome to the December monthly action call of the Peace Alliance. This is the first action call at this new time, Tuesday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, and I appreciate all of you for making the adjustment. Welcome, and we hope this day and time work better for most or all of you. Usually we start about 5 minutes early, but tonight I think with the change in time, we didn't have a lot of folks dial in early, so we're starting right at the top of the hour. And we have, as usual, a very full and robust agenda. In a moment, I'll introduce our president, Bob Baskin, and he will introduce our special December guest, Jessica Moses, and we'll have a chance for discussion with her. Then we'll have a few quick announcements, and then we'll hear about some grassroots victories, and then we'll turn to our monthly action for December and our bonus action for December and have some coaching, including some role-playing, and I know you're looking forward to that. So without further ado, I give you our very dedicated, caring, and hardworking president, Bob Baskin.
Oh my goodness, who's that? Anyway, thank you, Dan, and really thanks to all of you out there for joining us tonight. You know, I think, you know, given what all of us have been experiencing over the last several months, if not really several years now, I think it's really necessary to at least acknowledge what I believe has been a particularly difficult few weeks for humanity and certainly all of us. You know, all you have to do is read or watch the news or listen to the radio, you know, with the bombings and the gun attacks in so many parts of the world, from Paris and unfortunately most recently from San Bernardino, the ethnic and religious hostilities and the U.S. gun violence continuing to really challenge our ability to carry on calmly and happily in our lives, and I know we all desire to do that, as well as all of that international violence, of course, and the threat of much more, unfortunately, on many fronts. You know, unfortunately, many of these, the hostile flames that are being fanned are being fanned really by the politics of it and the fact that we're approaching an election year and the like. And it's disheartening in many ways, particularly to people like me who've been up on the Hill and who've seen that there are better ways and alternatives to having to carry on quite this dramatically. You know, the extreme rhetoric that some people have been issuing much more recently have proven to be a rallying cry for too many voters. It's easy to understand that people are angry, but it's hard to understand why leaders and people who are interested in running for much higher office and being among the most powerful in the world feel that they are making progress and accomplishing anything and being positive with the rhetoric that they use. You know, it's in times like this, though, and I think I'm even more grateful than ever that you guys choose to find a community of care and a community of action here with us at the Peace Alliance. We know there are solutions and ways to get ahead of the curve of so much of this violence, and we are grateful and excited, really, to keep promoting these powerful peace-building tools and policies along with all of you. It's in our minds, we see it as an even greater need than perhaps we ever felt before. I hope that you find this work and this community as valuable as all of us at the Peace Alliance do. And the fact that you are here on this call even tells us that perhaps you do. Before I, though, introduce our special guest, Jessica Moses, I want to share a special announcement that I think some of you may have already heard. But we believe that by tomorrow, Congress, having passed the House, and we think it'll be passed in the Senate, important provisions of the Youth Promise Act, which, as all of you know, has been our most important legislative priority for the last 6 years or so. And those provisions have been embedded in the final version of the major education bill, so-called Elementary and Secondary Education Act. And it's coming out as Senate 1177 with the title Every Student Succeeds. And it creates school-based promise plans to reduce exclusionary discipline. It's not everything we wanted, certainly. We know that there's still much more to do, but it really is a major accomplishment. And Representative Bobby Scott from Virginia, who's the bill's original sponsor, as most of you know, has repeatedly credited not only us, but what in effect he's doing is crediting you with creating that kind of support in Congress that he needed to get the Youth Promise Act passed. So again, to be clear, a significant part of the Youth Promise Act will soon be passed, and therefore I think the president will sign it and it will become law as part of this major education bill. And we'll be sharing much more about that with you and what it means about our ongoing advocacy in the coming weeks and months, because we know that there's more to do. This victory, though, is a true testament to your continued focus and diligence and patient, thoughtful relationship building with your members of Congress and the media and in your own communities, really. So please, I want you all to, despite all of the bad news that we've been hearing and listening to and watching and hearing about recently, to take a moment to recognize and feel this, to feel that you all, working with us together, have been a big part of really accomplishing something powerful for our young people, our youth, and for our nation, in advancing peace in our schools, in our neighborhoods, and presumably and hopefully even in our families. Jessica, I'm going to introduce you to our field in just a moment, but before I do, I think it might be helpful if I give you a little bit of a sense of the kinds of folks with whom you'll be talking with today. The folks on this call are mostly members of what we refer to as our Peace Alliance Action Teams, and they are people like Chicago Area Action Team Leader Seta Smart, whose team during the past 6 months, only 6 months, has met with the staff of both of their senators, both of the Illinois senators, and of three House members from their region. And after many months of relationship building and communication with these members, two out of three of them have signed on as co-sponsors of the Youth Promise Act, which you heard me just discussing. So, Jessica, now that you know a little bit, very little, I think, but a little bit, you can get a flavor for the success we've had and the contributions that these kinds of folks have made. Let me tell them a little bit about you. Jessica, as you know, if you read her bio, is a staff member on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. We those of us who work with the Prevention and Protection Working Group have met with her and listened to her and some of her colleagues talk about GAPA, the Genocide and Atrocity Prevention Bill that is being led by Senator Ben Cardin. But she's also worked in with coalitions to get that bill ready to be introduced. It's taken longer than we had hoped, but we think it's coming out very soon. Jessica can tell us a little bit more about that than probably I can. So a better ally we could not hope for. On the committee, she also covers, now here's a full laundry list that you'll be impressed with: humanitarian assistance, refugees, atrocity prevention, human rights and democracy, and governance efforts, and is a background working on refugee issues. Originally, she came from Portland, Oregon. I'm sure she's glad that she's not there swimming in the overflowed banks of the rivers from all of the rain that they've been having recently. And she did her undergraduate degree at Santa Clara University and her graduate degree at Tel Aviv University. So with that, I want to turn this back over to Jessica and have her give us a little bit more detail and information and allow you to ask her some questions about GAPA and all of the other good work that the Senate Foreign Relations Committee is doing. Jessica?
Thank you so much for that introduction, and congrats on getting your provisions in the education bill. That's no small feat, especially with today's climate. So just to give you a brief introduction of the history of the bill, I'm not sure how much everyone knows about it, so I'll breeze through it as quickly as I can get through it. The commitment to prevent acts of genocide and mass atrocities has been a bipartisan centerpiece of policy by consecutive administrations across the U.S. government. It's been, you know, George W. Bush. It's been Barack Obama. In 2011, President Obama put out a PSD 10. It was a presidential study directive. It was mainly coming from Samantha Power was driving this out of the NSC. It was her baby, and I think, you know, we've seen her kind of connection to the issue coming out of her book, Problems from Hell, that she won a Pulitzer for. So she has a real heart connection to this. And then from that presidential study directive, the APB was stood up in 2012, the Atrocity Prevention Board. And what that board does is it brings together all of the different agencies that have a piece of the puzzle, and it gets everyone on the same page looking forward. So they meet, I think they meet once a month, and they pick one country or one, maybe not even sometimes one country, but sometimes it's one small population in a country, and they do intelligence assessments, they do policy planning, they look at programming, they look at funding levels, and they pool resources and then move it accordingly. However, it was stood up in 2012. It has not been codified. So we're coming to the end of the Obama administration, and we're using this as a real opportunity to codify this mechanism so that when the administration closes in the end of 2016, the beginning of 2017, this is something that will last. It is something that will, you know, should there be a Republican president that doesn't really look at atrocities prevention in the same way, we will still have this board to rely on that can take what we've learned in this administration and carry it forward. I think as this exercise continues monthly, there's really been a body of knowledge that has been established and has grown, and an element of the bill that's really important, I think, that we don't talk enough about is the educational piece. So when we talk about atrocity prevention and peace building in this way, a lot of it really, we need to educate the members and we need to educate the staff on what this means and what it means to look at 2 years out. A good example of what the APB did, well, maybe this isn't a great example, but Burundi, we were able to see Burundi 2 years out and really plan for it and make sure that messaging was lined up, programming was lined up. There were a rapid response contingency mechanisms if need be. It was a multilateral, you know, our multilateral team at State Department was advocating for the UN office in Burundi to not be shut down. So it was just able to look out in the same direction and have a policy that was coordinated before we needed to scramble for a policy. And the National Security Council has found that this part, when it came to Burundi, has been so helpful. Another example I would guide you to, I guess it maybe is a little more not as scary, would be Burma and the Rohingya. The Atrocity Prevention Board really did a lot on the Rohingya, making sure that the assistant secretaries and, you know, the deputy assistant secretary and DOD and the intelligence community, they were all looking at this in the same direction. I know that. So I don't think anyone has seen legislative text. Is that correct?
I don't think so.
Okay. So there are four main elements of this bill. One is the Atrocity Prevention Board itself. One is the Complex Crisis Fund. Complex Crisis Fund has been great as far as it's really the only foreign assistance response that we have that isn't already pre-programmed 18 months out. It allows us to look at things as they happen, look at events as they happen, look at a lot of these trigger points that we see, elections, droughts, maybe an economic shock, and move money quickly to do these short, quick interventions to create a space to come in and really have adequate peace-building programs.
Jessica, this is Dan.
Yep.
It might help you to know and maybe help folks to know that on their action sheet for this month, the four areas that you're describing are outlined on the sheet. So I want you to relax about having the basic outline available so that you can listen more deeply to the details that Jessica is providing.
Okay.
And I would just add to that, I may have misspoken when I said, you know, we weren't that familiar. Our folks have been supporting funding for the Complex Crises Fund and the conflict stabilization operations over at state, you know, for years, but it hasn't been quite as detailed as I'm sure you're going to be able to explain.
Well, that makes me excited to hear about support for Complex Crisis Fund. I think that, you know, the louder you can be on that and the more consistent in your messaging is really helpful. The appropriators like this fund, and USAID has found it really useful, and us on the Hill have really seen the investment, you know, need, well, as a tool that needs to sustain. It's a good investment, I think, for the money that we put forward. So I'm glad to hear that you guys are engaged as a group. Getting back to the education piece, this bill builds in a training element to train Foreign Service officers and USAID Foreign Service officers who are going to high-risk posts so they can know the warning signs of atrocities. What are we looking at? What are we looking for? And then they can communicate it back to post, or not back to post, but back post will communicate it back to DC. So that everyone can be working with all the correct information. It also includes a reporting requirement, which is really important. I think that this might be somewhere where you bump up against a little resistance, is that people don't understand what the Atrocity Prevention Board has been doing. It's been kind of behind closed doors. It's at a classified level. So one of the elements that's really important is a reporting requirement. And we are asking that state report back to Congress on the actions being taken by this board and the countries that are being discussed, so that we can continue to have to play an important oversight role. Because if we are unaware of, you know, maybe a Burundi taking place, you know, a Burundi being watched a year out, or, you know, Burma, we can't move money and appropriate accordingly. So this allows us to have both that oversight role and the appropriation role that is so key. It also asks for the Director of National Intelligence to include in his or her annual testimony to Congress the threats to the U.S. on national security and a review of countries at risk for mass atrocities or genocide. I think it was in the Director's 2014 address to Congress, he was able to mention South Sudan, and the groups, the humanitarian groups, were really able to take that and mobilize. We found that really helpful, and so we've taken a lot of feedback from the different advocacy groups to really build this bill. This bill has been a largely collaborative process with many different groups and coalitions, so we're hoping to get as close as we can what the implementing partners on the ground, the advocacy groups, are saying that they need to be able to really make this the best process possible. As far as timing goes, and, you know, we're with you on the, you know, we would have liked to have introduced it sooner, but we are looking at the first week in January for an introduction.
That's great.
And on that, yeah, we're pushing for it. So.
Oh, I know. Look, I'm sure our people understand just how difficult it is to try to make sure that you anticipate the oppositional statements that people are going to try to look for, and to be able to sort of work around those, so that when you finally do unveil everything, there's as little chance of those kinds of things sort of biting you in the back as is possible. So
yeah,
we're understanding.
Well, thank you. This refugee crisis really kind of threw a wrench in our timing of this bill. But that aside, just to let you know, and this is kind of an aside, one of the talking points that when I've been talking to offices that I've found most useful is the Syria element. You know, we can't talk about atrocity prevention without currently talking about Syria. And this board was really set up after the Syria crisis had already begun. So as a forward-leaning, forward-looking mechanism, it's not, you know, really able to catch a Syria that's already begun. That's not what it's supposed to be doing. That's not its role. Those aren't the tools it has and, you know, the responsibilities it's been tasked with. But my talking point for that has been, you know, this is a reaction to the administration's response, Syrian response. If we have a coordinated mechanism in place, we are better able to mobilize and better able to use our resources and the tools we have at our disposal to make sure that we don't have to go through this again. So that being said, I'm sure I missed a few things that will come up in questions, but if we want to open it up to questions.
Thank you so much, Jessica. Matt and Dan, I'm not quite sure who's running the board tonight, but why don't you guys take over and allow people to raise their hands, in quotes.
Sure. Sounds good. Anybody who has a question for Jessica, please press 1 on your keypad, and I'll see that as a hand raised. I see a few hands going up already. Let's see. Let's start with Lori. Lori Draper is not only an action team leader, she's also our assistant field director. So, and she was quick with her hand anyway, so let's give her the first shot.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you so much, Jessica. It was really informative presentation. And what I would like to ask is, a lot of us have senators that are pretty dedicated to not approving anything that would look like a win to President Obama. And I'm wondering what strategy you might suggest for us to use to approach our senators that might fall into that category.
Sure. That's a great question. So the talking point I've been using about Syria and about, you know, this is our response to the administration's kind of lack of response on Syria, or, you know, often I just say Syrian response, kind of gets at that, right? It gets at maybe the Obama administration didn't robustly act in a way that we approved. And you can kind of leave it a little open-ended, and the offices can kind of take from it what they need. It also, I think, it adds an element of transparency and accountability, and it also creates a space for Congress to really play. Play is probably a bad analogy here, but with the oversight role, with the reporting requirements back to Congress, it allows a discussion to happen. So I think a lot of the senators that aren't going to want to give Obama a win, we're not framing this as an administration initiative for that reason. I think there's nothing to gain. No one's, the administration is coming to a close. How we're framing it is through an efficiency and accountability and transparency that allows a space for Congress to have a say. I think Republicans could really jump on that. It's allowing them to really maybe have a role in preventing the next atrocity.
Thank you.
Does that answer,
your
question?
Yes, it does. Gave me several great ideas. Thank you very much.
Of course.
Okay. I see another hand, and we'll have time for at least one question after that. So if other folks have questions, feel free to raise your hand. Stephen Costas, go ahead and will you tell us where you're from also? I don't recognize your name.
Stephen Costas. I'm from New York City, Chelsea.
Oh, great.
And I have this question to ask. And I have this question: to stop the Department of, is there any way to stop the Department of Homeland Security and the Republican administration from shutting off the Syrian refugee program out of paranoia led by the out of paranoia created by the Paris terror attacks?
Yeah, there is. We are kind of afraid and working against this possibility as much as we can that it might get, this might be a provision in the Appropriations Act. However, that being said, it would be a really big stretch for the Republicans to be willing to shut down the government to keep out Syrian refugees. I think we've really seen the conversation shift more towards a visa waiver program and making sure that all of our visa screening is in line. So, you know, that might mean provisions on visa screening instead of provisions to ban Syrian refugees. I think it would be helpful to send letters to, you know, if you live in states where your senators and your congressmen might be in danger of voting for an appropriations bill that includes those provisions, send them letters and tell them how dangerous this can be and how harmful it can be to the, you know, not only national security apparatus, but the image globally, you know, and the message that we send to these countries who are receiving hundreds of thousands of refugees. So I would say, you know, we're working on it, and I don't imagine those provisions actually passing both bodies, but, you know, it is a threat that they do try and stick it in there.
Great. I see another question, a hand up from our esteemed Communications Director, Matthew. Go ahead, Matthew.
Hello. Thanks for sharing everything, Jessica. Very helpful. I wonder if you have any examples or stories, tangible, that would give a sense of, it might even be through the State Department or the Complex Crisis Fund, that people could help folks understand more, like what somewhere that something has worked, that they could bring those stories to, like, a member of Congress or to their media or to their friends, anything that you've heard about or learned about over the years? Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, there's two elements to this response. I'd say this question is part of the problem, right, is this is held at a classified level, and so the board isn't sharing the conversations they have. I have some examples of, I have an example of where it's worked. The board did a lot with the Rohingya in Burma, and we're now seeing kind of a lessening of the crisis. We're seeing Rohingya taken out of these camps. They were put into these camps, and now we're seeing them being integrated back into their old communities. We're seeing them being integrated economically. They're, you know, through housing, through education. So I think that would be your best kind of selling point. Especially the Rohingya up on the Hill with Republican offices is a good link. McConnell, that's one of his foreign policy pet issues, is the Rohingya, actually.
I have one other question for you. Thanks, Matt. I have a question for you, Jessica, and it sort of goes to your sense of scale, I guess. I'm hearing great things about the collaborative process that created this bill, and that there's a lot of collaboration in the process itself. We're talking about the various agencies coordinating and sharing information and sharing a pool of money that can be used quickly in these various areas that the Complex Crisis Fund works. And then the education component within Foreign Service around recognizing hotspots. My question about scale is, how close does this come to your sort of, if you had an ideal international peace building bill, is this kind of a good start? Are we talking about how much is this a drop in the bucket, and how much is this a really strong impact that just needs to be augmented, like, you know, tenfold or threefold? How much impact are we having relative to your sense of the need for international peace building to grow?
So you might be asking the wrong person. I guess it's the right question, wrong person. I am such a bleeding heart, so I would tell you it needs a dedicated funding source for, you know, State Department for atrocities within the J Bureau. The Complex Crisis Fund needs to be authorized for, you know, $100 million. I might be the wrong person, but I think that this bill is a great bill to start the conversation. You know, it really gets at the problem of interagency collaboration. You know, maybe sometimes weak interagency collaboration. So breaking down those silos, breaking down those walls, getting everyone in the same room and mandating that they share their information, not only amongst each other, but amongst, you know, different parts of the U.S. government, whether it be the agencies or Congress. So as far as scale, I think it's a really good bill. If I had my perfect world, it would be a little bigger, it would go a little further, but within the political climate, that's not necessarily a possibility.
Okay.
It might be in a few years once we've educated the senators and educated the House members and educated the staff, and this becomes common parlance and common language and a way of thinking, we'll be able to take this further.
Great. That's perfect. Thank you. So it's a really solid start, and it's starting off well, and it's something that we can build on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's about all the time we have for questions and discussion. Let me thank you myself and hand this over to Bob to sort of say a final thanks and farewell.
No, Jessica, we really, really do appreciate, you know, you're taking the time on one hand, but more importantly for the hard work and good work that you do and will continue to do to get this bill introduced. And we're going to try to be as helpful as possible. You heard me say what Representative Scott feels about how effective we are when we turn our 60,000 or so volunteer advocates out and get them into their members' faces and into the media and so on. And we hope we can do the same thing with GAPA.
Well, great. Thank you so much for all the support. We really wouldn't have had this bill written and won't pass it without you. So thank you for that.
Well, please feel free to call us anytime with suggestions or comments or needs or whatever, and we will surely respond. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you.
And, of course,
okay,
you're welcome,
Dan,
to stay with us. But we assume, thanks, Bob. We assume you might have other things to do with the rest of your evening, but you're welcome to stay around and listen if you'd like.
Well, thank you. Have a good night.
You too. All right, folks. And as usual, this call is being recorded. And if you want to review any of Jessica's comments, it should be posted on our website within about 48 hours from now. So it's possibly tomorrow, but certainly by the day after. So we will be looking at the December action sheet and the bonus action sheet together in about 15 or 16 minutes. So if you haven't already, and especially if you have easy computer access right now, please go ahead to the monthly action page on our website. From the homepage, you should know it, most of you. But on the homepage, there are four red ribbons on the right, and one of them says monthly action. And you can find both the December monthly action and also the December bonus action. And this is how we are going to start playing our part or continue playing our part in turning this great start in international peace building, this great new phase in international peace building into law, into reality, and make the world the way we want it. A few announcements first. First, stats and reporting. Every action is a victory. Please keep us and your team leaders informed about all your actions with Congress and the media. After I share these stats, I'm going to share two methods which I think will be useful for making these numbers even more robust in future months. So for this past month, we had zero letters to the editor published. We had two op-ed pieces published. We had one newspaper article published, zero editorials, zero radio interviews, five congressional visits, two tabling events, one coalition building meeting, and one presentation. And this year to date, so starting in January, we've had 13 letters to the editor published, seven op-eds, six newspaper articles generated, one editorial, two radio interviews, 180 congressional visits, 11 tabling events, 21 coalition building meetings, and 8 public presentations. And I am feeling a lot of gratitude in my heart for all of you that have actually made those things happen. And I, you know, I really see those as the building blocks, as I said, of the world that we're working to create. Every time something is published, we're spreading tangible hope and helping people to be open to more positive directions in their personal lives and in their sense of policy. So two methods for increasing these numbers. One thing is around our new timing, these Tuesday night calls. We envision that this new timing could be helpful with the calls on Tuesday nights, always the second Tuesday of the month, and we're going to try this for at least a few months and see how it works. We strongly recommend that you make the rest of this week your action week every month. Plan to have the action of, you know, for your whole team to have the action complete by this coming Friday at the latest. So if you're a team leader, please support your team in taking the action by Friday, and that can just become a habit. If you're a team member, please let your team leader know when you've completed the action or if you need some particular support, if you have questions, if you want to role play, if you're putting off making some phone call to Congress or to an editor, role play it with somebody on your team. So that's the first suggestion. Use this week from Tuesday to Friday. Keep it simple. Just take that action and stay in touch and get it done. And the second suggestion is around goal setting for the coming year. We're coming to the end of our calendar year, and we plan to spend a little time on the January call coaching you on setting goals for the year, some realistic goals for 2016 that you'll be excited to just break right through and surpass potentially. So I'm going to invite you to please give a little bit of thought to what those goals might be for you and your team. If your team hasn't had any letters published at all, maybe this will be the year that your team gets 3 letters published. If you've had a meeting with an aide to your member of Congress, maybe this year you'll meet with the Congress member themselves in person. Or if your team seems to hover around 3 or 4 people on the team, maybe this year you'll see it expand to 8 or 9. So setting those goals can be helpful to taking the steps to making it happen. And we'll, as I said, we'll talk more about that on January's call. So
Dan,
to recap, go ahead, Matt.
My apologies for interrupting. There's a few new folks on tonight who probably aren't on action teams. I just wanted to interject that these actions that we'll be talking about for the rest of the call are things anyone can do, even if you're not on an action team. So just wanted to know that we're thrilled to have you guys on and know that you can chime in and play with us too.
Absolutely. Thank you, Matt. You have a privilege to interrupt any time. Jump right in. Excellent point. I'm talking largely in terms of teams, but this is something you can do on your own. And if you find yourself craving more support, feel free to check in with me and or Lori about what Action Team membership might do for you. So to recap, one, with a new day and time, see about completing all these actions by Friday. Start thinking about some 2016 goals for you and your teams. And on January, our January call will be partly devoted to supporting you in having clarity around those goals and meeting or surpassing them. Okay, so now to our grassroots victory. We have one special grassroots victory we want to share tonight. There's been so much in the news lately that I imagine many of you may have wanted to respond to, felt like, gosh, I wish I could influence this or the public perception of this. And there was one incident in particular this past week that has probably been difficult for many of us to digest. One of our action team leaders did some feeling and thinking and decided to raise her voice about it, and that's our action team leader in San Bernardino, California, Bobby Jo Chavarria. Are you ready to share with us, Bobby Jo?
Yes, hi everyone, sorry.
Great, hi, no problem, welcome.
Okay, so I'm sorry, I was right in the middle of my son asking me about his homework and on your intro, but let me kind of collect. So what happened here in San Bernardino, everyone knows, what was really, you know, sad and overwhelming and frustrating all at the same time was It's so easy for us to get the nation's attention on something so horrific and so shocking, and you know all the questions about who did what and what were their intentions, and of course the innocent lives and the families that are being devastated by this event. So of course I feel that, but I quickly went to, we've got to do better, and this is what we've been calling for. And so I was really moved by that. Like, you know, this isn't new, not in this city, not in this area, not in this community. And that's just the physical violence of you know, murder that we see. But we have the apathy, and we have the disenfranchisement, and we have poverty in our community. And, you know, one of the conversations that I had with my mom was, because she works for the state here in San Bernardino, was, well, you know what it's like to see, say, be a brown person or a foreign person and be kind of questioned of whether or not you belong in this community. And we both have experienced that at different levels. So I can't even imagine if we were to just take the framing that these were our neighbors, these two folks who they say have done all this stuff. These are our neighbors, and they were walking and talking and moving around in this community for years. The worker, you know, the coworker, for years. What did we do as a community that made these folks feel that they were on the outside so much that they would be willing to do this? And we went on the next evening, Wednesday is when the events happened. Thursday, the city and the mayor and the police department held a vigil at a local stadium. This is a stadium that we go to, that we celebrated my 3-year-old's birthday this past June. So this is home to me. And I went there wanting to hear some hope. And luckily, I had a conversation with someone on Wednesday, a young man from San Bernardino, who was like, well, maybe now, finally, you know, I hate to think there's a gift in this, but maybe this is the gift that will finally do something for the nation and for some healing. And so when I went to this vigil, and I was really frustrated the whole night, because for a handful of people, and none of them elected officials, none of them community leaders, but for a handful of the speakers, everyone was focused on this thing as if it erupted from nowhere, this horrible thing that has devastated, you know, 16 families, as if it erupted from nowhere. And that was really frustrating to me. And so I took the time, and that was one of the difficulties of finding the time, among all the other work that I'm doing, to like put that on paper and say we have to do something, and this call to action, and frame it in a way that nobody's talking about, but we in the peace movement absolutely are aware of and informed about. And so, you know, I set aside some time on Friday, and in between phone calls and things, I Googled a couple of statistics that just made my point enough. And I tried not to get caught in the details because it could have taken me another, you know, I could have done a thesis and it could have taken a long time. I just need to get this out there to someone. We've already published something in my local paper, and they did a really long op-ed a couple of months ago. But I thought this needed to be bigger than just my local paper. So I reached out to the local LA Progressive, who's online. They have, you know, 50,000 readers. And I asked them, would they please put this up? And then I followed up again with the editor. After I sent the email, I sent them a Facebook message and said,
more noodles, more noodles.
More noodles?
Yes.
Okay. Can Papa help you with the noodles? Thank you. Sorry. And I followed up with him, and he said, you know, right away I'll get this up. And then when he posted it and then sent me the link, I was like, okay, this is good. This is how we get the message out and how we call people to action. And and change the conversation. And, you know, if I would have thought about it more, I definitely would have, like, called out our elected officials and stuff. But I'm still, I started to forward it to all their offices and say, look, if you need help, you know, having this deeper conversation, I'm here. There's others that are here that have been doing this work. And so that's the next step that we're doing with this. So I hope that, you know, inspires folks to take devastating things and just stand up for peace and stand up for our community. And this is the way that we can do it. You know, changing the whole conversation out in the ether. And, you know, media is one opportunity, and we got to take it.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I don't have anything to add. I'm so appreciate that you took those steps and that you shared them with us, that you found your voice and that you found your motivation and that you shared that with us. So I just really appreciate it that you did it and that you shared it. Anything else that you want to add, just to give you the chance to say anything further?
You know, I've gotten feedback already of, you know, thank you for this perspective. And I think people, this is what we went through in the training for the team, people are yearning for answers and solutions and not platitudes and talking points. They're looking for that, and I'm hoping that this starts the conversation. In my community in particular, this is a conversation that we avoid, and thousands of lives have been devastated by violence this last 10 years that I've been active. And so absolutely, people are looking for something more concrete and more solid and different. And so they need to hear our voices, and they will come.
Terrific. Wonderful. All right. Make sure you get enough noodles. Everybody gets enough noodles.
Right. Yeah.
Take good care.
Dinner time.
All right. Awesome.
Well, thank you everyone, for all your work.
Yeah. Thank you, too. So this month we have both an action and a bonus action. Have you heard me say a couple of times? When we get to the bonus action in a moment, I want you to recall some of what Bobby Joe just shared. But let's talk about the December action. Is there anybody who kind of knows what the December action is and can basically just tell us what it is, either if you're looking at the action sheet or you just remember what it is? Is there a volunteer who can press 1 on your keypad and just tell us what the action is? Can I see a 1? Anybody looking at the action sheet kind of know what this December action is? What was it? Something about Genocide and Atrocities Prevention Act. Oh, there's a hand. Let's see. Okay. Stephen, you're looking at the action sheet. Can you tell us what the action is?
Yes, I can look. Yes, I'm looking, and I'm bringing it up right now.
Okay. Well, while you're bringing it up, okay, go ahead. What
it's
you got?
Let me see. It's the one where we peacefully prevent genocide. Through diplomacy and to authorize the Atrocities Prevention Board and the Complex Crises Fund. The primary targets at this point appear to be both Burundi and the CAR.
Yes, thank you. Thanks, Stephen. So those are two of the places where The fund has been active in the Central African Republic and in Burundi, and the action for this month, so some of you may have dialed in and have checked it out while we were talking about it. The action is to promote this bill, which is about to be dropped. It's going to be introduced, as Jessica said, in probably the beginning of January, by sending an email and making a follow-up phone call to your senators. Both of your senators, send an email and make a follow-up phone call and requesting that they become initial co-sponsors by contacting Senator Ben Cardin, who's the lead sponsor of the bill. Is there anybody who's willing to role play that follow-up conversation? So in this situation, you've now sent an email requesting that someone be an initial co-sponsor of the bill. So I'd like somebody to role play that follow-up conversation where you just, you know, check in, call, speak to whoever answers the phone in the senator's office, and just register that this is what you'd like them to do, that you'd like them to go ahead and take this action. Just quick and simple, leaving a message for the senator. Great, I see at least one hand up. Karen, we go ahead and let's pretend. Which one of your senators do you want to be calling?
Oh, why don't we start with the harder one, Senator Kirk.
Senator Kirk. Okay, great. Are you gonna call the Washington D.C. office or the local office? Which one do you think? Might sound like a trick question. The number that we have on the action sheet is the D.C. office.
Yeah.
But you know, communication with both is great. If you're gonna call just one, I'd say call D.C. So, okay, whenever you're ready, you can say ring ring, and I'll let it go to the congressional switchboard because that's the number that's on the sheet.
So I should say ring, ring?
Yes, please, because you're calling.
Okay, ring, ring.
Congressional switchboard, how may I direct your call?
Hello, I'd like Senator Kirk's office, please.
Just a moment. Hello, this is Senator Kirk's office. Dan speaking. How may I help you?
Hello, Dan. Would you put me in touch with the aide who handles foreign relations issues, please?
Sure. That would be Jared. He's out of the office right now, but I can put you through to his voicemail. Would that be sufficient for now?
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you.
Okay, just a moment. Hi, you've reached Jared's voicemail. Please leave a message, and if you're a constituent, I'll be happy to convey your interest to the senator. Beep.
Hello, Jared. My name is Karen Johnson. I'm one of Senator Kirk's constituents in Illinois. I live in Lockport. I sent an email earlier this week about the Genocide and Atrocities Prevention Act. It's going to be dropped in January, and I'd really very much like Senator Kirk to be among the senators that are on as initial co-sponsors when it drops. Would you please contact me either through the email or at 312-blah-blah-blah as soon as possible? Thank you so much.
If you're satisfied with your message, please press. Just kidding. Awesome. Thank you. As per usual, I'd love to do a quick self debrief. So, would you reflect, please, Karen, on what you did there that you're really glad you did? What did you remember to do that you want to remember for when it's the real thing?
I had the action sheet in front of me, so I could. Foreign relations issues, remember to ask for that person, and went back at the top to actually say Genocide and Atrocities Prevention Act, because sometimes I come up with something else other than the actual name of the act.
Yes, the name of the bill, it's your key.
Yeah.
Awesome. those are, yeah, great things. Anything else that you did that you want to remember for next time?
I don't know. I think that's it. I really just followed the instructions. It's that simple.
Great. I have a list of some things that I think you did well. You, if I may, you said that you were a constituent. It's always good to identify yourself as a constituent. You let them know that you sent an email and you were following up. You told them about this bill and that it's going to be introduced in January. So that helps them know that it's not a bill that's already in the Senate, but it's getting ready to be introduced. So you made that clear. And you made a really clear request. You said, I'd like the senator to be an initial co-sponsor. So That's exactly what we wanted him to do. And you also made a clear request for follow-up. You said, please have the senator, or please, Jared, let me know what the senator's position is, and that he could do it either by the email or you left him a number. So those are all just, you know, knocking out of the park. Karen Johnson.
Woo-hoo. Yeah, that's true. I guess I could mention Senator Cardin's name again, even though I would have that in the email. That might be a good reminder to say the other senator's name.
Okay. Yeah. Anything else that you think could be improved? Any room for improvement or changes that you kind of would like to do next time?
I think I would do 3 minutes of meditation before I initiate the call, so then it will probably just flow a little bit more smoothly, and I will be more like peace in my voice.
Ah, wonderful, wonderful. That sounds like a great plan. I recommend that for everybody. So, while I've got you on the line, can I keep you on for a role play around the bonus action too?
Sure.
Thank you. Okay. So there's also a bonus action. What did you say, huh?
I haven't said that one yet. Okay.
A little hesitation. So I'm sure it'll be great again. So do you have that bonus action sheet handy as well?
Just going to pull it up now.
Okay. For folks that haven't seen it yet, it's right below the regular action. I'm on the same monthly action page. So there's the December action, and then there's the bonus action. Got it there? Was that a yeah?
Yeah, it's downloaded, but it's waiting to click on it.
Having a hard time seeing it.
See that it's downloaded. Okay, now it's opening.
Huh? Have you got it? Because I could ask somebody else to read the instructions and then ask you to come back to you for the role play. Are you seeing it yet, or shall I ask somebody else?
It's up. Or I could.
It's up.
Okay. Instructions are.
Okay. Great. Please read the instructions for us. And actually, read the instructions and then the first sentence of the actual text.
Okay. Please read through, then replace the bold bracketed sections with memories from your own childhood or from your current tradition, and in places with other specific information. Also, welcome to make any other changes you may wish to make. To make this feel more like your own. Submit to opinion or op-ed editor of your local paper. Coordinate with your team, if you are on a team, so that only one submission goes to each publication area. Go online to find out how many words they allow for op-eds and how to send them in. Follow up with a phone call to the editor to make sure they received and see if they recommend any changes or if they will publish as is. If they don't plan to publish it, send it to a smaller local newspaper by repeating the same steps above. No matter what happens, celebrate your great work for peace building. Yay!
Yay! So we read the first sentence also of the text.
Yeah, but somehow my document went away. Oh, it's this wonderful Windows program where I think it's going to do updates.
Okay. I can read it. Shall I read it? So the first sentence is, in my childhood, December was a time that typically included 8 nights of visits from the Hanukkah fairy. And then it goes on. So I want to make sure this is clear, that the story at the beginning, this first paragraph, is just a placeholder. Okay, that's my story, Dan Kahn's story. You can't have it. You need to tell one of your own, or you can modify this any other way you choose. Okay, you can take the story out. You can make some other changes. So please read through it. Substitute your own member of Congress. There's a few other places that are bolded where I name my member of Congress, and you're invited to make changes. So the first step is to decide where you think you'll submit it. if you decide to do this action. And this takes a little bit of coordination, okay? As the instruction said, we don't want to submit more than one op-ed to the same paper or even to papers with overlapping distribution areas. So basically, if you're on an action team, we probably only want one op-ed submission from each team, unless your team covers like two or more cities, which each has its own paper, or different areas where you can find smaller papers. If you're not on a team and you wish to take this action, please check our website to see if there's a team near you. You can do that on the action team page on the website, and then check with the team leader to see if an op-ed is already getting submitted. Or you can check with me. Just let me know if you're submitting it, and I'll keep track. And I'm sure you can all find a publication that won't overlap. We won't have a problem of too many op-eds. It's just a matter of finding maybe one county over, there'll be a different newspaper, or maybe even a whole different region of the country. I've had an op-ed printed in a town I used to live in after I'd moved away from that town. So some papers are happy to run opinion pieces from other parts of the country. So you'll look online and find out the requirements, what the word limit is, and where to submit it. So I had wanted to role play that conversation with the editor, but I've been a little remiss in my time management. So I think I'm going to renege on that plan and just let you know that I submitted an op-ed to the Baltimore Sun last week, and when it came time to make the follow-up phone call, I hesitated. I actually paused because I had thoughts come up like, you know, there's this busy editor, they get hundreds of submissions, you know, why am I going to bother them? So even though I've done this lots of times and I'm like, you know, national field director, I still had hesitations once it was time to actually make the call. But that's where this teamwork comes in, the fact that I'm connected with this community and I have some experience and the support of all of you and the staff. And I did follow through and actually left a message. But once I started leaving the message, it all made sense. You know, I felt like I was legit. I was saying, you know, letting her know that I just submitted this piece and that if she has any concerns or questions about length or content, I was willing to make changes and that I would love to hear back from her. So once I actually got the wheels in motion, it made a lot of sense to be having that conversation. And if it doesn't get accepted the first place you submit it, then it's time to think about, is there a smaller paper or maybe a little farther afield? I'm running about 2.5 minutes over. I want to ask you to indulge me on that. Anybody have any questions about either the action or the bonus action for this month? Go ahead and press 1 on your keypad if you have a question about either of these two actions. And if a question comes up, Lori and I will be available, dan@peacealliance.org or lori@peacealliance.org. And I see, seeing no new hands, I'm going to say, okay, we've kind of got it covered. Also, if you're on the call and you are not on an action team and want to talk about joining an action team, same two emails, dan@peacealliance.org or lori@peacealliance.org. We'll be happy to talk with you about it. Now, as a closing quote, and then I'm going to ask Matt to open up all the phone lines so that we can maybe say a collective yippee about passing some of the major provisions of the Youth Promise Act into law tomorrow, and we'll get into more detail about which provisions and which are still remaining, as Bob said, in the coming weeks, and also to say goodnight. Closing quote, John Lennon, actually, the anniversary of his death is today. John Lennon was killed 35 years ago, and he said, give peace a chance. And I think so many of us are saying, give peace a chance, and let us show you some ways you can do that. So I'm proud of us for continuing on in this tradition of really giving peace a chance. So thanks to all of you. I'm proud of you. Hope you're proud of yourselves. And the phone lines are open. So how about on 3, a collective yippee for the provisions of the Youth Promise Act and for all of you for all the amazing work that you've done. 1, 2, 3.
Yippee!
All right. We'll be in touch. Thanks for being a family.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Good night.